Thank you. Certainly a pleasure to be here, and especially the fact that we got here. The highway was absolutely beautiful last night. We were a little concerned because the roads were so terrible this on Thursday morning. Sarah couldn't even drive up to the school. It was just terrible up there, and we thought, oh, here we go. We don't know what's coming Friday, and then prayed about it. The roads were absolutely gorgeous last night, so certainly appreciate that. I want to begin with a question today. How do people generally react when they hear of someone having a problem in his or her life? How do people generally react? Sympathy or cynicism? Comfort or caring or criticism? Finger pointing or lending a hand? Interesting, isn't it, when you think of that question, because you might yourself look at your own feelings and ask the question of yourself, how do I react? How have I reacted in the past when I've heard of someone else having problems? One sad aspect of human nature is that there's a tendency to rejoice when other people have problems. Now, you may not feel that way, you may not react that way, I hope not, but human nature tends to do that. That's why God tells us to be careful about rejoicing in someone else's problems or tragedies, because he knows that human nature tends to do that. Somehow, we feel better because someone else is doing worse. Maybe it's something you get from school. Possibly when you do better than the other kids in exams, and somehow it's better when they do poorly, so you look better. Maybe that competitiveness starts early in our lives and maybe carries on, so that when we are seeing someone else going through a problem, we tend to perhaps say, oh, well, you know what they're like. And the criticism starts to flow. Ah, well, they deserve it. Probably. Somewhere in the back of our minds, maybe we're thinking that way. And it is sad that human nature would do that, tend to do that, but there is a tendency there. And perhaps, like I said, maybe it's our society, maybe this competitiveness where we do better if someone else does poorly. If their mark is lower than ours, then we feel better. And there's a comparison that always goes on in classrooms, obviously, when there's exams. We even have curves, you know, good, they did really bad. That's good, because I'll be higher. My mark will be better. Interesting that Jesus knew this tendency, and he gave a commandment. He called it a new commandment. Let's go to John 13 and verse 34. Christ was trying to combat the tendencies in man's human nature, and, of course, gave us many principles, one of which is the new commandment, that we are to be different than others, than the natural. The new commandment, he says, I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And he said, this is new, a new aspect of living, of the way human beings ought to live. And verse 35, it becomes an identification mark. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Now normally, you'd say, well, why would that set us apart? Why would it set us apart? He says this is going to be a dramatic mark that people will automatically recognize you if you live like Jesus Christ lived. If you love like he loved, you're going to be different than other people. Now, I see lots of examples, and I'm sure you do, of people in the world who love one another and who do good things for one another. There are many. I can tell you stories of individuals we've come in contact with in the last year or so, and how nice others have been to them, and they've done incredible things for them. Raising money so his family could go down to Toronto and learn more about some of the problems that their child has. Things like that, where people go out of their way and really are nice people. So what is Jesus talking about? He's talking about a love that goes further than just being nice. After all, it's not difficult to smile at people and shake hands and be nice. He's talking about being different than the natural tendencies that are out there, that we are normally, the way we normally react, to be different than that. And you ask the question, was this different than the commandments that Jesus had given before? We know that the commandments are based on love. The whole basis of the Old Testament is based on the Ten Commandments, and that people were to live by the Ten Commandments. Jesus even reiterated them when asked by the young man about eternal life and what he needed to do. Matthew 19, it talks about that. What do I need to do? He said, keep the commandments. Yet he said to the disciples, a new commandment I give to you. There must be something extra. There must be something that goes beyond just being nice, being a nice person. As I said, many people would qualify if you said, is he a nice person or is she a nice person? All kinds of people would qualify. Yes, very nice. They're very loving, very friendly, very warm, very helpful. People who will go out of their way for others. So it is interesting that Jesus would say this to the disciples and putting a kind of a difference to it. The key to understanding the verse is the part of verse 35 that says, as I have loved you. And I think it's important for us to look at how did Jesus love? What did he do that was different? You contrast the old concept of love, which is abstaining from harming someone in any way. The Ten Commandments basically are that. You abstain from doing any harm to somebody. You don't steal their stuff. You don't commit adultery with their wife or husband. You don't do this, you don't do that. So Christ must have been saying, okay, you've got to go beyond that. It's a new concept that you have to love in the way that I love. Because many people say, by not stealing, I'm not a thief, by not stealing, I've fulfilled my responsibility. That's what people think many times religion is. If I don't steal, I'm okay. If I don't do this on Sunday, I'm okay. If I don't do that, I'm okay. If I go to church, I'm okay. And it's a false concept. You may not be okay at all by sitting in a church. And if we see the world today, we look at the world, there's lots of people who go to church who think they're going to be in the kingdom of God when it comes, or they're going to go to heaven, or going to go on the rapture, or whatever it is. They think they're okay because they're not doing this, and they're not doing that, and they're not doing other things. And there's some that even are going beyond that, who are helping others. You have to admire some of the individuals who have, you know, they're raising money and they're out there working and they're helping and assisting and trying to dry out the alcoholics and trying to help cure the drug addicts. There's lots of people who are doing tremendous work, lots of work. Unfortunately, they don't have the fundamentals that Christ talks about as far as his commandments and as far as what is necessary for a Christian to do. Some of them do not have those particular fundamentals, but you have to admire what they do, because they do a lot. What's important, I think, is for us to look at, do I go far enough in my love? Do I go to the degree that Jesus Christ went? Because most of us could say, yes, I've kept the commandments for many years. I've kept the commandments of God to the best of my ability. We've attended church for years and years and years. And we've tried to do what is right for years and years and years. Then we have to ask ourselves then, do I go far enough as to what Jesus Christ expects me to do? And what he says as far as the new commandment. In the past, people have become isolationist in churches. They've been isolationist, sort of, I'll just do what I'm supposed to do, and I'll be okay. I don't want to be polluted by the world, you know, and so I'll be all right. I'll just live on my lonesome self here, and we'll go to church. And, you know, it's a totally wrong concept when you look at the Bible. And yet, that those different things develop. As human beings see some principle where Jesus said, keep yourself unspotted from the world, instead of taking it in balance and saying, that just means don't do what the world does as far as breaking God's law. It doesn't say isolate yourself. Nowhere does it ever say that. Isolate yourself from the world. On the contrary, we are to be lights to the world. You can't be a light to the world if you're sitting in a cave, or if you refuse to have anything to do with your neighbors, or you refuse to have anything to do with your local activities that are in your community. You can't let your light shine if you don't have contact with people. And that's one thing I think that we have to understand about Jesus Christ. He was with everybody. He was not isolationist. He sat down and had dinner with people who were sinners. He was criticized for those things. How can he, you know, have anything to do with her? She actually touched him. Oh, you know, some of the stories you read, you think, you know, people do really go to extremes. They're just absolute extremes. And we have to be careful about that. The extreme we should go to is to the extent that we love people and that we help people. And as we go through this sermon today, I want to show some of the things that Jesus Christ did, just to remind us that this is what he expects us to do as much as possible. I want to give you an example, or go back and just review an example of one thing that I think was probably a shock to all of us, and that was the story of Diana and the reaction of what occurred when she died. I don't think any of us who were alive at that time are ever going to have that image removed from our minds of what happened when she died. The image of the flowers. As soon as I say that, all of you I know will say, yeah, that's right, I remember that. The flowers. And, you know, it was so shocking to see an ocean, a sea of flowers there. And why? Was it just because she was a nice person? There have been lots of other people who are nice people who died, and that never happened. There was something special. And yes, I know she was a sinner. That's going to come up. There have been individuals that have surprised me by with their reactions that she was a sinner. How could you ever talk about someone like that as a good example because she was a sinner? Well, those people would probably have stoned her if they were standing there. And Jesus Christ wasn't there, she probably would have been stoned. But if Jesus was there, he would have said, go and sin no more. That's what he would have said. Go and sin no more. You shouldn't be doing what you're doing. You made a mistake. But there would have been others who would have stoned her. Many in our modern society today, if they had had that ability, they would have done it. Same as the Pharisees. We caught this woman in the very act. You can hear the self-righteousness dripping all over the place. And when you have that reaction, a person needs to ask, why am I reacting this way? Critical of somebody who made a mistake, that's right, but she also did some pretty good things, pretty neat things, like sneaking out of the palace, you know, not going to the discos. But she was sneaking out so she could go to the hospitals and visit the sick children. And it only came out because the nurses told people, and the kids themselves told people, because she'd leave them little notes and things. I thought, that's pretty incredible. That's somebody, I believe, who is going beyond nice. Somebody who's practicing real love. Even though she was imperfect, she was a sinner, she made mistakes. But I want to ask all of us, how do we react? Did we react when we saw somebody like that with criticism, condemnation? Or was it perhaps a little more care, concern, compassion? I called the sermon the four C's today. There's even more C's that you can use. Compassion, caring, concern, or criticism. And it's sad that many people react in a way, who with criticism, with negativism. And you'll see somebody like Diana who didn't even want the notoriety. How many public figures do you know who don't want notoriety? Politicians who don't want to be well known and well rewarded for their good deeds or whatever it is. I thought it was quite interesting to see the outpouring of love that people had, the reaction they had. And in those cases, most of the people reacted with concern, with caring. They went out and bought flowers and piled them up. And I don't think I'll ever forget that picture, and I don't think it'll ever kind of go out of my mind. It was just so unbelievable. If I saw it again, they had another kind of a documentary on. I saw it the other day there. And it was really incredible. But you know, Jesus Christ himself was criticized, wasn't it? How did people react to Jesus Christ? Did they say, oh yeah, he was out eating and he was having a good time. Now that was nice to see. A man get out and have a good meal and have fun with his friends. How did they react? This guy's a glutton. Jesus Christ himself. And there were people who were saying, he's a drunkard. Because he probably went out and had a glass of wine and was laughing and having a good time. And they probably thought, look at that. Doesn't look like his normal self. He's probably half cut. He's a drunkard and a glutton. There was their C. Their C was criticism. Right? Not care, concern, compassion. Asking, was he really drunk? How much did he drink? Or did they just assume? Because Christ never drank too much, ever. Never ate too much, ever. So that he would be classed as a glutton. He might have had a big meal and maybe felt stuffed. Could have, because it says in many places that he was human like we are. In many cases, he was tired. He got weary because of a long trip. Got tired. So he was human. Probably maybe ate a huge meal. Big turkey dinner or whatever it was. Lamb dinner. Stuffed himself because it just feels good to eat a lot sometimes. But he was no way considered a sinner because of what he was doing. Never sinned. It's sad when you see people who react in the wrong way because they only hurt themselves. The person who is critical, the critic, and it's not difficult to set yourself up as a critic, is it? It's easy to find things that are wrong with people. We had a critic on our staff, you know, up there. And I knew the first meeting we had, you know, she was yapping about something or other. I guess she got mad at the principal because she couldn't decorate her room or something like that. And I thought, uh-oh, she's going to be gone. It's going to be a question of time. He'll find something that he doesn't like and she'll be gone. Yep, went back to school after the break. She was no longer there. Why? Because she had set herself up as a critic and she would not back off. And so that's what happened. And sadly, and she only hurt herself. Didn't hurt anybody else, really. Just herself. And when we do that, it's the person that we are hurting is in here. It's this person. It's the character. It's our own selves that we are hurting. Jesus did things and said things and taught things that were good for us, that benefit us. When you have care and concern for someone else, that helps you. It helps them too, of course, but it also helps us. Inside, you just feel different. When you can stop and help somebody on the highway, or you can stop and do whatever it is that you're doing for someone else. And taking that extra step, one of the things we have to remember, one of the guidelines that we should look at is, what is it that I have in my life that I can use to help somebody else? What is it that you can do to help someone? What skill do you have? What talent do you have? It might just be that you're a good listener and you call somebody up and they want to talk. It might just be that you can just sit and listen for a while. It might be that you have a special skill in some area where you can say, okay, is there anybody that I know of who can use my help? But you've got to do that type of thing, or we won't be thinking in the way that Jesus Christ thought. We won't be following that new commandment. We have to think in those terms. How can I help somebody? What is it that they have a problem with that I can assist in? Bearing one another's burdens. The Bible is full of doing this. It's there. But Jesus had to put it in words so we can understand it. This new commandment. Love others as I have loved you. And that is beyond, that goes beyond just a keeping of the commandments in a way that we don't do something. God's way goes beyond that. How can I love somebody else? Jonathan Swift once wrote, "It is very unfortunate that too many of us have just enough religion to hate one another and not enough religion to love one another." And that's quite true. Think about the world. What are the wars fought? What name are the wars fought in? Jesus Christ, our Savior, we're going to go out and kill for him with our shields, but we're going to put a cross on it, and we're going to have the Crusades. And I'm going to go hack people up, and then I'm going to capture these people and make them repent or whatever, so they're no longer barbarians. I mean, think of the religious wars that are going on. It's just pathetic. I saw this fellow was telling me, one of the staff members up there, I got to get a t-shirt. I want to get a t-shirt like this. It says on the front, "Jesus, save us." Just one of the staff members was telling me he saw one. I thought it'd be hilarious. "Jesus, save us." And on the back it says, "From your followers." I thought that was really scary, you know. And some of the people in the world today, that's what they're like. They're frightening. They're going to save us. That's the way the world looks at it. So the persecution is going to come on the church because people want to save you. And religion does that all the time, doesn't it? We're going to save you from yourself. We're going to put you in some horrible torture chamber. And this is the way the world has been with religion. And of course, they weren't really followers of Jesus at all. You wouldn't need to be saved from Jesus' followers, because Jesus' followers will be going above and beyond to love, to help, to assist, and none of this nonsense that they do in the name of Christ. It's sad when you see that. I just thought, you know, this is what the world thinks. The staff member, that's what he thought. T-shirt would, you know, just fit perfectly. But the funny part was they were brought up in the church. Not in the Church of God, but in a church. And they were telling me their backgrounds. They were in a particular organization, grew up going to Sunday school all the time and being taught everything. And that's what their impression of religion is now. And it's kind of sad to see that. But that's the way the world is today. We need to ask the question, do we have the heart knowledge? We have the head knowledge. Do we have the heart knowledge? I'm just talking about us as individuals. You look at yourself. You don't look at others. That's another guideline. Check out number one. Check out number one. Look in the mirror. Don't look around. And check out number two and three and five and seven. Check out number one. Do I have it here? What have I done? Or maybe we should ask, what can I do to make sure that I am following that new commandment of Jesus Christ? What is it that I can do? And it may, your situation, you know, you have to look at yourself. We have to look at our own self. Say, no, I think you should do this. No, this is what I need to do as a person. How can I be a better follower of Jesus Christ? When it came to Diana, her strength was being with people, relationships with people, being able to touch people, being able to pick up a little child who had leprosy. You know, that's pretty scary. And yet she went to some of the hot countries and she was dealing with those little children, picking them up. And you know, not many people would do that. Not many people would do that. And yet she did it. And that was her strength. She had a particular gift. But you know, brethren, all of you all of us have particular gifts. We do. All you got to do is discover it. We all have some particular gift that God has given us where we can help other people. And it may not be in anything that you even recognize right now. It may be you'll sit down someday and say, hey, I can do such and such. It may be just a simple talent like singing. Maybe you can help, you know, somebody with your music. Or maybe you can help somebody with your particular way of talking, the way of having, you know, talking back and forth with people or listening or whatever it might be. But all of us have to look at ourselves, find our strengths. Find your particular strength and use it. God has given us gifts. We all have some. Some have greater than others, or many gifts and some have few. But we all have gifts. And there's always something we can do. And God is asking us, showing us, that we need to step out in faith. We need to be able to have the courage to do things. Have the courage to help, to assist. You know, it says that you cannot spread sunshine around without getting it on yourself. You know, the old story, some of these different things. You just can't do it. You cannot bring sunshine into somebody else's life without having it affect you too. It's like jam. You spread it around. You get it all over everybody else. You get it on yourself. And, you know, we can do that, but we have to have the courage to do it. We got to ask the question, what depth does our religion reach? Most religion, most people in the world today, the religions are relatively shallow. They affect them only for a certain small part of their life. Maybe it might only be for an hour on Sunday morning. Maybe one day a year, you know, Christmas Day or Easter Day or whatever it is that they go to church. That might be the only, you know, time that it affects them. Others, it might affect them a little bit more. They're not going to lie. They're not going to steal. But how far down does religion go? That's what we have to ask. Jesus Christ is saying it's got to become every little part of your whole being has to be affected by it. Because if you're going to have that commandment, the new commandment, in your life, it goes much deeper than anything else can. It goes beyond anything else. It becomes your whole being. It becomes your whole mind. Your whole way of thinking. How can I assist? How can I help? And then things like sitting back and criticizing someone become second, it's gone. You begin to have concern. How can I help that person? I see somebody who's got a difficult problem. Sit back and criticize? No, it doesn't happen. When we become like Jesus Christ, he didn't do that. Even with the Pharisees, when he corrected them, he was doing it out of love for them. Jesus didn't go in there and just gloat and say, you guys are just a bunch of... That wasn't the way he did that. I can assure you of that. When we see Jesus' mind and the way he handled things, he would have been correcting them for their good so that they could change their ways. Maybe they didn't. That was their choice. But he gave them the words of life. He gave them to everyone. And they could have accepted them. Christ has given us the words of life, and he wants us to follow those words. He's given us that new commandment, and that should become a part of us, should become a part of our character and a part of our mind. Why did people want to follow Jesus around? It's a good question. You know, you can be cynical. You could say, well, they got fed for free. You know, that would be one answer, and there probably were some who might just wanted a free meal. They heard he fed a bunch of people, and maybe they'll get a free meal. But I think it was far more than that. I think they could sense something in Christ that wasn't in anybody else. They wanted to be with him because of just the way he was. Also, obviously, he did miracles. He healed people. But I believe it was because of his character and his whole approach, the way he talked, the way he spoke, the way he taught. I think people just flocked to him because of that. And they wanted to be with him just because he was Christ, just because he was the way he was. Who liked him? It was the common people. It wasn't necessarily the religious people at all. They were afraid of him, thought he was going to take their jobs away. But you could, I believe that people could sense Christ's compassion, his love, his concern for them. Because people kept, you know, coming to him, even when others said, don't, you know, keep quiet. They were yelling at him. Jesus, please, you know, save us, heal us. You people be quiet. You know, here's the normal reaction of the human nature. These guys got problems, probably something they did. Be quiet. Don't bother us. You know, get out of our way. Get lost. Let's look at Matthew 20 and verse 30. What was his reaction to these individuals? The miracles that Christ did revolved around his love for those people. And you can search through the Bible. You cannot find a place where Christ turned people away. You can't find a place where he said, no, I'm not going to heal you because you're a rotten sinner or because you made a mistake. That was your fault. Jesus always reacted to them with love and mercy. Sometimes he asked them questions, you know, about things, but he would always heal them and help them. Verse 31, as they moved along, the multitude warned them that they should be quiet. And these were the blind men who were yelling out. They were smart enough not to listen to the crowd. That's a good lesson. Sometimes you don't want to listen to the crowd. You don't want to listen to what everybody thinks. Everyone knows this. Everyone thinks that. You want to know sometimes that these experts don't know what they're talking about. So they just kept yelling. They cried out all the more. Have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David. What was Christ's reaction? I'm too busy. I've got this great big crowd I'm looking after, and you guys expect me to stop and come over here and heal you. That's kind of, you know, I don't think I'm going to do that. No. Jesus stood still, and he called them, and he said, what do you want me to do for you? And they said, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. And look at the verse 34. Jesus had compassion. Jesus had compassion, felt sorry for them. And he touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. You know, the impact of these, sometimes you read a verse like that, and you don't get the impact. As if you had it, say you had a video, and you were watching this, and or a movie, and you're watching this, and here's two men who have been blind. Blind. And you can't imagine what it's like. None of us can imagine. You close your eyes, you're still seeing, you know, shut your eyes. You're still seeing light. You're still seeing through your eyelids. Then you put your hands over your eyes and it gets a little darker. But you get into a black room and it's pitch black. And these guys living that every minute of their lives, every day of their lives, and all of a sudden, here's a man who opens their eyes and they can see. Jesus had compassion on them. Do we have compassion? Do we think of someone who's got a problem? And do we react like, how can I help? Or do we say, well, you know what those people are like. Eh, you know what, you know, he's always been like such and such. Or somebody gets in a car accident and the reaction says, you know, somebody has a motorcycle accident or something like that. And you think, well, what's he doing driving on a motorcycle anyway? He shouldn't have a motorcycle. They're dangerous. Serves him right. Would that be a reaction of a lot of people? Absolutely, it would. Hopefully we wouldn't react that way. Hopefully we go beyond that. You say somebody may be foolish, maybe have done something silly, and injure themselves, maybe they're paralyzed, what kind of reaction do we have? Compassion? Concern? Caring? Or critical? The world is full of critics. It's getting worse, I think. I think it's actually getting worse. There's people that are having, they have less compassion now than they had a few years ago. I think it's getting worse, at least in my impression with people. Jesus said, when he's saying this verse to us about having a different kind of commandment, he's talking about having an active love. An active love. A proactive love, where you look for opportunities to help. You look for opportunities to assist. becomes a part of our character, where we look at individuals and we say, there's somebody who needs some help. What can I do? Nobody has to tell us when you're an individual who has that. Nobody has to tell you, well, could you go over and do such and such? I remember one time an individual told me, I said, made an announcement that there was somebody who was moving. And so we made this announcement, and I don't want to criticize people, but a lot of people didn't show up that I thought should have showed up. And so we went there, and I said to the individual, well, you know, we needed some help there. You weren't able to make it. Oh, well, if you had told me, we would just organize a crew. I thought, why do you have to do that? Why not just come and help? Why not come and help? But that's what the person had learned. And I felt, you know, they hadn't learned what this commandment was all about. Go out of your way. Go ahead and do it yourself. Don't wait for somebody to tell you, you should go and serve here, you should do this. Do it yourself. That's what Christ is saying. He did things himself. He didn't expect someone else to die. He said, I'm going to do it. I am going to go, and I'm going to allow myself to get beaten and hurt badly, suffer horribly, and die. He did it himself. He says to us, I want you to learn to love as I have loved you. How did he love us? How did he love the disciples? He died. He went and died for them, died for us. He loved from the point of view of his example. He did all kinds of miracles. He would feed people. Let's go to one of those verses, Matthew 15 and verse 32. Look at what he says about it. Here are a whole bunch of people out there, thousands of them. And his reaction was, he called the disciples to himself and he said, I have compassion on the multitude. Compassion. I'm thinking about their welfare. I'm caring about them. I have concern about them because they've now been with me 3 days and they have nothing to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry lest they faint on the way. Christ had compassion on these people, and so he caused a miracle to take place and he fed them. He did it again when he fed the 5,000, Matthew 14. You can see that again sometime if you want. One of the lessons that you can get even from these stories is that if we use things properly, physical things properly, God can make them multiply. It's a good lesson. You know, it's even in our own interest to look after people, to assist and to help, to be generous and care for people. It's even in our own interest, our own selfish interest to do that, because God can make things multiply. He can make sure that we always have plenty to eat, even if you give it away. It's basically what he's saying. And some of these lessons, I think, are written there, so we learn some of these different things. Christ would go, even when people had problems with demons, he'd go out of his way, go somewhere. Let's go to Matthew chapter 4, verse 22. Matthew chapter 4. So immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him, and Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in the synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria. They brought him all sick people who were afflicted with various diseases and torments, those who were demon-possessed, epileptics and paralytics. He healed them all. Now that would have taken a lot of effort. Just the time involved. I'm sure that he would have been there a long, long time dealing with this person, then dealing with that one. And they brought people from all over the place. Can you imagine today what would happen today if somebody found out that there was a minister who could heal people of everything, anything and everything, and everyone who came to them, came to him? Can you imagine what would happen? You can be sure that most of the hospitals in the city would be empty because there would be people who would hear this and they'd be dragging people over here. There would be a lineup. if there was a minister who could do that, or if Christ himself was here, at that, can you imagine how long that would take? He would have been working all day just healing people. He would have been tired, worn out. But he would have said, there's another four or five people, I've got to finish, you know, go and deal with them now. Christ was like that. He didn't turn anyone away. This would have been a big job, a huge job, but Christ had that compassion and concern. And he would not turn them away. Even a Roman soldier that you might think, why would he bother with a Roman soldier? A Roman? This is the guys, you know, these guys are the ones who brought all the problems. They're the ones who butchered our people. In many cases, the Romans just, it was bad news. If you got in a battle with the Romans, you lost generally, and you lost badly. There weren't too many people who survived. And yet here's a Roman soldier. It didn't matter who the person was. Matthew chapter 8, verse 5. Matthew chapter 8, verse 5. Now when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him pleading with him, saying, Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented. Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. What would you do if you were a minister and you had somebody come to you who had nothing to do with the church whatsoever, somebody you might normally despise? How would you react if they came and said, I'd like to be anointed? You know, you put yourself in a position like that, how would you react? Christ went to the Roman soldier's place without a problem. He went there and he had no difficulty with that, healing somebody. You know, it's funny how people get out of shape, though. People do get out of shape sometimes with what they read in the Bible. We had a circumstance one time where a minister just refused to anoint. Refused to anoint because of a particular reason. And it was really a pretty lousy reason as far as I was concerned at the time. It was years and years ago. But I just couldn't understand it. Why would somebody do that? You know, the Bible doesn't show anywhere where you refuse somebody. But somehow, somewhere in the mind, the person had got a little bit out of whack as to what would Jesus Christ do, because he didn't have a problem with this, even though it was a Roman soldier. Even the disciples, if you look at some of the different things in the Bible, in Matthew, let's go to Matthew 19. What was their reaction? Maybe they're coming out of a society where children were put down or whatever, I don't know. But why did they react this way? Matthew 19 and verse 13. Then little children were brought to him, that he might put his hands on them and pray. But the disciples rebuked them. We have people in the world today who treat their children like chattel or whatever. They don't have any real compassion or mercy or concern. Jesus said, and again, he's talking to his own disciples who have been around Christ for quite a while, and you'd sort of think, well, why? They just didn't get it, you know, there was a problem here. Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. And he laid his hands on them and departed from there. Christ had a different approach, different attitude, one of concern, care, compassion, not criticism or cynicism. Jesus was a different type. He put no limitations on who he helped. Let's go to John chapter 4. When you come out of a background, you always have to watch yourself carefully. When you come out of maybe your background is such that you came out of some pretty bad experiences with certain groups of people, or you've grown up thinking this particular attitude about certain groups of people. Oh, they're always this way. They're all like that. You know, we got to watch that. We got to be careful. Because Christ came out of a situation like that. He was Jewish. Let's go to John chapter 4. We know the story here. This is where the woman, the Samaritan woman, had come to the well, and Christ was at the well, and he had dealings with this woman. Verse 27, at this point his disciples came and they marveled that he talked with a woman. because you didn't talk to women. Women were sort of somewhere just maybe above a cow a little bit. And you didn't talk to a Samaritan woman because she was worse than that. She was dirt because the Samaritans were all dirt. And here's Christ teaching her. Again, see the reaction? How do we react when you see different groups of people? What is your reaction? Because you've been brought up in a certain society, we all have, certain society, that thinks certain ways. And we've got to watch that. We've got to be careful about that. Otherwise, you turn around and automatically put people in little boxes. Oh, that's what they're like. That group is like that. Therefore, this person is probably like that because that's what they're like. Instead of saying, how does Jesus Christ view that person? How should I view that person if I want to be like Jesus Christ? How should I look at them? What should I think? Because Christ turned the disciples' world upside down by doing this. They were shocked, marveled. Wow, first of all, he's talking to a woman. A woman. And she's a Samaritan woman. They were shocked, marveled. And yet Christ was just bringing out a very basic principle. You have to learn to love as I have loved you. Jesus died for everybody. He died for Bin Laden, believe it or not. Right? The world's thrashing boy right now. But Christ died for him too. It's hard to sort of conceptualize that. Do we want to think of him in that way, or do we want to make him the bad guy and trash him, see if we can kill him, The way the world is, of course, that's what you'd want to do. You want to think bad thoughts. Christ didn't think that way. The Samaritans were dirt in the Jews' eyes. Christ didn't think that way. Didn't treat her that way. Was not. Who had the right to be self-righteous more than anybody else? Who had the right? Jesus Christ did. He never sinned, ever. Can you imagine meeting another human being who never sinned, ever? And what you would normally get from that person? If they had never sinned, and they looked at you or me, whoa, they'd have a right to sit back and criticize and condemn. But Jesus Christ wouldn't do that. He was the one who had the right to do that, and he didn't do that. He said, go and sin no more. Try harder. Be a little better. And the Samaritan woman, I would give you eternal life. And all kinds of people believed in him there. Because of his example, because he talked to her out of love and concern, caring and compassion. He talked to that woman, and guess what she did? She went back and told everybody about it. That's how you let your light shine. Right? That's how he let his light shine. She went back and told everybody in town, hey, guess who I met? People came to see him. Many converted. Many believed on him after that. That's what it says. Because of what he said and how he dealt with her. The compassion and mercy and love that he had. We have to ask ourselves, does love rule us? Does love rule us and our actions? If we sat back and analyzed, does love rule us? It has to. If we want to be followers of Jesus Christ, he lived in a way that love was absolutely utmost. Let's go to Matthew chapter 20, verse 25. It's so difficult for people to get this. It's really difficult. It has to be something, it's a gift of God's Spirit to understand this. What true servant leadership is, it is a gift from God. It's not weakness. It's not some phony kind of smile that you put on. Matthew 20, verse 25, Jesus called them to himself, and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Now, we know that Jesus Christ was love. Ask the question, was Jesus weak? Was he weak? Did he let people push him around? And that, you know, he'd never say boo to anybody or boo to a goose, as they would say, because he had love and mercy. No, Christ was loving, but he was strong and powerful. When he had to, he really let fly. When he went in and dealt with those people in the temple, he didn't hold back. He knew what needed to be done. He cleaned it out. He was powerful, strong, yet merciful, loving, kind. Now look at these verses. You know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. Those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. It doesn't mean you pussyfoot around and never say anything to anybody about anything. It just means you have a serving attitude, a loving attitude. If somebody needs some help, you go help them. If you can think of someone who needs assistance in some way, give them a call. It's a proactive love that we have to have. Not some mushy, phony stuff where you smile at everybody. That's not what he's talking about. That's fine. You've got to be nice. You've got to smile. You've got to be kind. But not weak. Not some weakling. That's not what Christ was like. And that's not what he expects. He expects us to love in a strong and powerful way. That we go out of our way to help and to assist if somebody has a problem. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. That doesn't mean that somebody bosses you around like a slave, like we've been accustomed to slavery in our world. That's not what it's talking about. It means somebody who is at your call if you need assistance and help. They're always there, always willing to help. That know that you need some assistance, so they're there, right there on the spot. He says, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, he didn't sit and bark orders out, bring me a drink. It's time for a smoke, dear. Go get my pipe. Get my slippers. Throw a log on the fire. That's not what he's talking about. But he came to serve, to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. That was his motivation. That's the whole purpose he was here, to serve, to give his life. In love and mercy. He had tremendous love and compassion always for people. We may not get any glory or any thanks even, brethren, in this life. You might go and do this for the rest of your life and never even get a peep of a thank you from people. Because many times today, people have gotten away from that. They don't appreciate things. You can do a lot of work and a lot of assistance for people without getting ever a thank you or even a pat on the back or anything. That doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter at all. We may not get it in this life, yet God says he is not unrighteous to forget your labor of love. He doesn't just say, for all the great things you've accomplished, you built a business and you're rich and you've got a big boat and you've got a big house. He doesn't say any of that. He said, he's not going to be unrighteous to forget your labor of love. Hebrews 6 and verse 10. God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward his name. See, you're doing the work, whatever you've done to try to accomplish the work of God. And that is getting Jesus Christ's name out there and God's name out there and trying to help people see the truth and give them the understanding that they need. We've tried to do all of that, doing the work. He says, I'm not going to forget that. And then he says, also that in that you've ministered to the saints and do minister. That's what he is expecting us to do, to minister to the saints, to help one another, to extend that love, that new commandment, the love that Jesus Christ had for us, the love that we have to have for each other and for others. Jesus will not forget the fact that we've ministered to each other in the church, but he also expects us to go further than that. You want to let your light shine? You know, the people in the church are already in the church, right? They're already here. So it's not so important that our light shines around the room, but it's important that it shines outside the building, that it shines elsewhere. and that it shines in such a way that it will affect people in a positive way. That it'll shine so that they'll say. And it may not be for this life. It might be for the time they come up in the resurrection. We may be doing things now for people who are going to come out of the tribulation. They may not recognize anything now, but they might say, "Oh, hey, that was you. You were, well, that's incredible. If you can make it, well, that's terrific. Maybe I can make it too." You know, God will give people the chance, you know, the opportunities as time goes on. You know, Joan Baez once wrote, she's a singer, some of you remember her probably. She once wrote, "You don't get to choose how you're going to die or when. You can only decide how you're going to live." I thought, that's interesting, you know. You've got to live with yourself. Let's go to Matthew 25. We'll see how this is an active love and not a passive one. It's not just abstaining from breaking the commandments. Let's go to Matthew 25, verse 32. "All the nations are going to be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. He'll set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left. And then the king will say to those on his right hand," I don't know if we could read this every day. If we could just kind of read it every day maybe, but we can't obviously. But it'd probably be good for us if we read it every day. "Come, you blessed of my Father." Here are the people who are the blessed of my Father. "Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." You've made it, folks. Come and inherit the kingdom. You know, that's going to be an incredible day. Verse 35. "For I was hungry, and you gave me food." We should say, you know, we should get a checklist out, maybe, if we want to really analyze ourselves. Write down these things. The last time I gave somebody food. "I was thirsty and you gave me drink." We could write those down. The last time I do a checklist of all of these. "I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me." Now, one person doesn't necessarily have to do all these things. This isn't what it's saying. But it's saying basically that this is the attitude that we have. That if we saw someone who was thirsty, we would go out of our way to get them a drink. If we saw somebody who was hungry, we would go out of our way to get them something to eat. That's what he's saying. Not that we do this every day and that we've all done all these things all the time. It's not what he's saying. He's saying here's the attitude of what God is looking for is an attitude of love, mercy, care, concern, compassion. The kind of attitude that he wants. "I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him and say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will say, "Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me." All he's saying is that attitude has to be there. The new commandment. Love as I have loved you. Christ feeds the world, basically. He lives what he says. He takes care of people. And then he will also say to those on the left hand, "Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you didn't care." You didn't really care. "I was thirsty. You didn't bother to do anything about it. I was a stranger and you acted like you didn't know me." That's what he's saying. "Naked, you did not clothe me. You didn't care when I was cold, sick and in prison, and you didn't come. I was there by myself. I could have used some help and some encouragement, and you didn't show up." And then they'll also answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or stranger or naked or sick in prison and did not minister to you? And he will say, I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous unto eternal life. You know, if we read 1 Corinthians 13 about love, it's self-explanatory. All we have to do is go through that. It just reminds us, right? The greatest of these. Everything else you can do, not really that important comparatively, but he said the greatest is love. Don't forget about love. If you don't have it, you don't profit at all. Profits mean nothing, he said. So brethren, let's have care, concern, compassion. Let's have the kind of attitude that Jesus showed over and over and over again. The love that he extended to everybody and to us, the compassion, the mercy that he has. Let's try, brethren, with all our being to live the new commandment.